Welcome to bonus track number one on the resource Time Management for Busy Pastors. My name is Roy Mansfield, and I'm the Director of Training for Church Leader Insights and one of the teaching pastors at The Journey. And I am so excited to just take a few minutes this morning with Nelson Searcy to talk to you about those 35 time management practices. Well, maybe not. We won't talk about all 35 of them because we don't have time for it. But I want to pick two or three that have really impacted my life. As I was growing up and preparing for ministry, honestly, I never really thought about time management. That seemed to be something for, you know, guys who weren't in ministry. It didn't seem very spiritual. But I realized that time is the most precious resource that God has given me. And as I began to apply some of these practices that Nelson talked about in the resource, I have realized that it has radically affected my productivity, how I feel about what I get done, the effectiveness I have with people. It's just been amazing. And Nelson is here with me in the studio. Great to have you here, of course, Nelson.
It's great to be here, Roy. And we just finished recording the 35 practices that busy pastors can apply to our lives. And I think you and I fall into that category of being busy pastors. It seems like we always have more work to do than we can possibly get done in the time that we have. It always seems like there's more ministry than the month allows to happen. What we want to do in this bonus session is just go back and pick four or five of the practices and talk at length a little bit more about how we've actually applied those to our lives and to our ministries. It's pretty exciting to have the opportunity to do this bonus session.
It sure is, and exciting for me because I am constantly trying to work on these. You know, when you were recording them and I was there in the studio with you, I was kind of notching them off like, oh yeah, I do that one. And then you get to what I'm like, oh, I don't do that one quite so well. And I realize the more I work on these, the better I get. And I'm working on a lot of them, I mean, some of them every day, Nelson. For example, today, as we were coming, we were going to meet just a few minutes ago to come and record this. And I had planned to get to our meeting place about 10 minutes early, and we had talked about that. I believe that was practice number 14, arrived 10 minutes early. And I didn't used to be the 10-minute early guy, Nelson. In fact, I thought it was good time management to get there like 30 seconds before you were supposed to be there, because I didn't want to waste that extra, you know, 9 minutes and 30 seconds. And I realized that your life is just so filled with stress. You end up being late a lot of the time. And what I found today, for example, is I'd planned to get there 10 minutes early, and I got a phone call that I had to take, and it kind of threw my time off. And so I was going to just barely, I don't know if you noticed, Nelson, but I walked in about 2 seconds before, maybe five before our meeting time. That last 30 minutes that I was getting ready to come down for our meeting was really a waste, because I was really concerned about one thing: am I going to be late? And now the good thing is because I'd prepared for that, I wasn't late. I took my phone call, and I was on time. And that is a good thing about planning to get somewhere 10 minutes early, is things are always going to come up. The bus is going to break down, or you're going to get stuck in traffic, or you're going to get that phone call you have to take. And so when you do that, at least you're still on time. But this morning, those last 30 minutes when I was getting ready, really in the back of my mind, even in the front of my mind, I was just rushing to try to make sure I would get there on time. Normally, I'm relaxed. I'm thinking. I'm oftentimes praying. I'm processing. And then I get there. I sit down. I prepare myself. And here's the thing is, if you get there 10 minutes early, you prepare yourself emotionally. You know, as a pastor, there's so many meetings you go into, and you just came out of a counseling session or something that's overwhelming, and you need a little time before the next thing to just decompress emotionally. Another thing is mentally. You know, I'm there and I get to think through, okay, what are the key things that I'm going to talk about? And then spiritually, for me, if I get there a few minutes early, I'm amazed as a pastor how easily I can forget that God's with me. And if I have a couple minutes before we get started, I always use that time just to sort of invite God back. I know He's always there, but I'm not always aware that He's there. So for me, Nelson, to get there 5 minutes early reduces my stress, makes my time before I get there so much more productive. And then the actual time that I spend in the meeting is always more productive.
Yeah, there's nothing real magical, Roy, about 10 minutes, getting there 10 minutes early. You can get there 15 minutes early. You can get there 5 minutes early. 10 minutes seems to be enough time to allow for some last-minute additions into your schedule, and it seems to give you that margin that we were just talking about on the time management recording. Yesterday, I had a very similar issue. I don't do a lot of driving in New York City because of the nature of the city, but I had to drive somewhere, and I had to go to an appointment in a professional office building, and I had to drive there. And Google Maps had told me that it would be about 22 minutes in good traffic or about 40 minutes in bad traffic. And I've never driven in New York City where there is good traffic. So I gave myself the 40 minutes. And actually what I tried to do is I tried to give myself an hour. But that didn't work out. It took me an extra 5 minutes to get out of the office. And by the time I actually got to my car, I had about 50 minutes to make this travel time. And the truth is, I made it on time. I got there in time to hit the restroom in the office building before I went to my meeting. I actually had just a moment or two to check my voicemails of people who might have called me on the way over. And I had a book in the car just in case I had gotten there in the 22 minutes early. I could have turned that time into some productive time. And it doesn't always work out that way in my life. Many times I try to add the 10-minute margin and I don't make it. But yesterday it worked out. Another area where I try to apply this is going home in the evening. I think I mentioned this in the recording, but maybe some of the listeners would have this in common with me. My spouse expects that I'm going to be home at the time I say I'm going to be home. And I used to always tell her, I'm going to be home at 6:30, knowing that it was 6 o'clock and it would take me a full 30 minutes to get home. So I wouldn't give myself any margin. I would say I'd be home at 6:30. Now, in Kelly's mind, it didn't matter if I had said 6:30, 6:45, or 7. She just wanted to know the time. And so what I've learned to do is to add up how long I think it'll take and then add an extra 10 minutes to it. And then if I do get home a little bit early, that can be a surprise for her. Or I can use that couple of minutes just before to do exactly what you were talking about, which is decompress from the day, kind of catch my breath, think about what she's been doing throughout the day, rehearse in my mind what I might be walking in on with the baby or with her state of mind or what I might have to do that evening. And it just gives me that little extra time if I need to take a little walk around the block or say a prayer or take a couple of extra breaths. The 10-minute really does give you margin. And I don't need any more stress in my life. So I like 10 minutes because it lowers the stress in my life instead of raising the stress.
Yeah, I would say for me that is probably the biggest advantage is just the ability it gives me to live a little lower stressed life.
Yeah, so that's arrived 10 minutes early in this bonus discussion.
Yeah, the next one that has really been impacting for me is to make your travel time work time. And you may not be flying all the time from this place or that place, but you travel. Some of you walk. Some of you may drive, some of you may commute on a bus or a train, and some of you may take a plane. And actually, I had a wonderful experience flying over here. What I usually do is I try to have my laptop and have things ready that I can do offline on my laptop when I am flying. And I've timed, just exactly when I get to open that laptop up. I'm waiting for that ding when you can turn your laptop back on. And I try to push it until the stewardess says, "Hey, buddy, turn that laptop off," before we land there. But, of course, there's a battery issue.
They're always impressed when you refer to them as stewardesses, too.
All right, I've alienated an entire sector of society. I'm very sorry about that. But what is the politically correct term?
I think it would be flight attendant.
Flight attendant. All right. Well, I'm rather archaic. Thank you for bringing me back here to the 21st century, Nelson. But those people, that are always telling you to shut your laptop, those are the people I'm talking about. And it was the greatest thing because I had a long flight, and I knew the flight was longer than my battery. And there was this little place where I could plug in my power cord right on the plane. And so I had just the most productive time on the plane. But if I had not prepared time, and I think this is the key here, is if you're going to use your travel time, you've got to be prepared. So I had a lot of work that I could do offline that I didn't need the internet, and I just got a tremendous amount done. Now, I do a lot of walking as well. A big part of it, before we moved our offices, I spent about 35 to 40 minutes just walking from the bus down to our office back when we were on 35th Street. And what I would do is I would plan times that I needed to, for that time, I would talk on the phone. Like when I had a number, I would schedule the calls that I needed to make. Some I could make at that time, and I'd schedule them. And I would make those calls walking to the bus and walking back from the bus. That's an amazing amount of time. 40 minutes on the phone, you can get a lot accomplished every day that, might have just been wasted. And you can do this on when you're driving too, but the key is I don't think you're supposed to drive and be punching those little numbers in.
In certain states, that's illegal,
I think. Yes, yes. Actually, I think it is in ours. I believe the United States are the ones where that's illegal. But what I would do is I would actually punch the numbers in before I left the office. So they were right, and I'd call it and hang up. So they're right there, like five calls right in my call history.
And you were serious about that.
I'm serious about
it. Did you ever get complaints like, did you try to call me just a few minutes ago?
No. It's an art, Nelson. You have to push the end button before it actually engages the person's phone. See, it's an art. But I've honed it to a fine art. And so all I have to do is look at my call history, push a button, and I would set up, you know I have 20 minutes on the road, and so I would, you know, just make those five calls. So I found that if you plan ahead, and that's the key, you know, you say, okay, I've got this much time to travel, plan ahead, prepare what you need, so you can use that time productively.
Yeah, as most people know, if they've listened to any of our resources, I hate to travel. I love the result of travel. I love getting there and speaking at the conference and doing the event, but the actual getting from point to point is something that I really hate. And I even hate having to commute in the car on a daily basis as well. But the key with travel time is to really be fanatical about making sure you're using that time in the most productive fashion. That goes back to our prayer about, Lord, what's the best use of my time right now? So when I pray that prayer, I say, Lord, please give me an exit row with an empty middle seat. That's my miraculous prayer that I always pray. But I really have become quite fanatical about that because there are certain seats on a plane that are more conducive to work than others. For example, one of the websites I like to go to, and hopefully this website's still up and running when you're listening to this recording, is a website called Seat Guru, SEATGURU. And what you do is you pick your plane and the airline that you're flying on, and it will tell you what are the best seats. Because believe it or not, on certain airlines, certain seats have more leg room than others. And when you're a taller person like myself, and they always seem to put all the tall, big guys in the same row with me, having a few extra inches on one side or the other can make a huge difference when it comes to your productivity. So I always look at that. I also try to play all kinds of games with the airlines. I use all the frequent flyer points I can. I try to get upgrades even if I don't have as many points as they say I would need. And of course, if you get upgraded, that's a great increase in productivity. But I also will switch seats. You know, just before the door closes on the flight, you can often switch seats. And if there's a whole row in the back somewhere that's empty and you sweet talk the flight attendant, I believe it is, Roy.
I think so. The flight person that gives you the drinks person.
If you who's primarily there for your safety, I might add.
Yes.
If you would just talk with him beforehand and say, look, I'm just really overworked and stressed, as I know you are. And if there's a seat in the back, would you let me know? I'd love to move to maybe an empty seat or have a window seat where there's an empty middle, which is a great seat to have as well. Just be fanatical about that because your time really is your life. And it's worth that extra 10 minutes or so on the front end for me to then have two or three uninterrupted hours of work time on the plane. Now, I realize that most of the people that that are in our audience probably aren't flying that much, or when they are, they're flying perhaps more for more vacation-type reasons or more family-type reasons. But when you are traveling for business, turn that into work time. And then if you're traveling with your family, by all means, enjoy that time with your family and don't worry about trying to get as much done as you can. But even when you're traveling for business, you have to prepare in advance. You have to have a folder of work that you can do. You have to have the files ready on your computer. You have to think that through. But now, for most of our audience, you're probably traveling every day by car. You're commuting back and forth to the office. And I think one of the greatest time management tools that you can have is a house close to the office. I've always been a fan of having my house within 20 minutes of the office. Now, unfortunately, some of the places that I've worked in the past, including now, are not the best real estate prices. The areas around the office seem to be higher real estate prices than perhaps areas a little bit further away. So at times I have had to have a longer commute. But if you can have a shorter commute, that certainly will save you time. It gives you more family time at home. It gives you more time in the morning to get there. But if you can't live within 20 minutes, or even if you do, what could you do during that 20 minutes? Well, Roy mentioned one of the things you can do. You can get a hands-free phone and the little thing that everybody wears on their ear, and you can make these phone calls while you're going back and forth to the office. Or if it's too early, you can use that time as learning time in your car by having audios ready to go, having audio recordings that you're going to listen to. So instead of listening to the morning show or the five drive home show in the afternoon, you're listening to books on tape, you're listening to audio recordings like that. And I would even venture that many of you right now are listening to this as you're driving somewhere. And so the key is to be ready to turn that empty time where you're just driving or you're just traveling into learning time without taking away from your focus on the road as it may be.
And you know, I got to admit, Nelson, I'm exactly the opposite of you. I love to travel, and here's why. if I'm getting something done related to work or family or something I need to do, and I'm traveling, I always feel like I'm doing two things at the same time. Like I'm getting just twice as much done as everybody else on that plane. They're just going someplace. I'm going someplace and getting stuff done.
Yeah, well, I've said to you, I think, in the past, when we're under a deadline, if I just had a cross-country flight with an empty middle
That's
row,
right.
I could get this done. Because the great thing about plane time is it's uninterrupted time. Other than someone coming around asking you if you want a beverage or something like that, you get very few interruptions. And if you can get an exit row seat by the window with an empty middle, man, you can go to town and really get some work done.
Well, that's as long as the plane doesn't crash, because if the plane crashes, you know, you're responsible to get everybody out that door.
Well, it is an 85-pound door, so you have to be careful with that.
Yeah.
But the key here is to be intentional. And some of you may be thinking right now, gosh, you guys are just weird. You know, you're just fanatics. But no, as we say on one of the other bonus tracks, we really believe that good time management is good stewardship, because time equals life. And so any time that you can use your time more effectively, I think you should. And so you're just simply praying, Lord, what's the best use of my time right now?
And Nelson, if I could just mention one other, it just came to mind. We talk, I think, in the worship planning seminar about doing a trial run or a run through for your message, maybe on Thursday for Sunday. And what I'll do when we've done that is I'll record the message that I'm going to be teaching, and I will listen to that when I'm driving. And, you know, that is an excruciating experience at times. But, you know, if I get the chance to do that, to listen to the message three or four times before I actually teach it, boy, it really helps me to sort of integrate it into myself a little better. I feel more comfortable with it. Obviously, I see things that I can say in a different way. And honestly, it gives me an opportunity to literally pray through the message and listen to myself and also be praying for the congregation as I do. So that's been another thing that's been helpful for me in travel time.
Yeah, just for those who may be unfamiliar with that, what you do, you get a small recorder, like an MP3 recorder. You can buy them online or buy them at the Best Buy or whatever. And you record your message on a Thursday morning, perhaps with a fake audience of some of your fellow colleagues on staff, or maybe some lay people in the church, or maybe it's just you half the time. When I'm doing it, it's just me. But it's weird at first, but you preach that message just like you would normally preach it. And then you load that either on your iPod by loading it on your computer and then syncing it to your iPod or to your MP3 device. And then you can listen to that. And you can play that MP3 through your car like most people know how to do. Or you can just simply listen to it in your ears, maybe as you're going back and forth. Not when you're driving. You don't want to have that in your ear when you're driving. But as you're going back and forth. And that's just a great way to really drive that message home with you. And you would be amazed at how much better your sermon is because you've listened to it over and over in your mind. And then, of course, you can do that multiple times. I sometimes will record it, listen to it, make my edits, and then record it again. And that becomes sort of the perfect draft that I'm then trying to memorize or prepare for on Sunday.
Yeah, so the first time management principle we've covered is to arrive 10 minutes early. The second is to make travel time work time. And then the third one I'd like to mention is what we called in practice number 10, the top six list.
The top six list, with apologies to David Letterman, that was number 10 on our practices list, but yet it wasn't a top 10 list. I think that's copyrighted. So we want to be fresh and innovative. So we've developed the top six list. And you know what we ought to do, Roy? We ought to do a seminar sometimes called the best time waste practices. Instead of the time management practices, we could talk about 35 ways you could waste time.
You know, I think probably I'll do that resource, Nelson. you did the time management one. I'm ready to do the time wasting resource.
Yeah, as Absolutely. I said, I'm definitely not an expert on time management, but I can run with the best of them when it comes to time wasting.
Well, so, anyway, all that experience we've had at wasting time.
So the top six list, and I talked about in the resource of how you make a list of the top six actions that you have to get done every day. And I want to give credit where credit is due. This is not an idea that's original with me. It goes back to some of the classic books on time management. But more recently, a guy by the name of Chet Holmes wrote a book called The Ultimate Sales Machine. It was a book for sales managers. And I try to stay up on the different best-selling books in different arenas, whether it's business or ministry. And so this was a book written for sales managers, but he had a chapter on time management. And I thought, well, sales managers, they face a lot of the similar pressures that we do of having to meet quotas every week. We have Sunday that comes around every week. So I was really interested to see what he had to say about time management. And a lot of what he had to say was some of the same stuff I said on the resource, but this was a new one, or at least one that he brought back from a classic book from several decades ago. that he reframed in a very positive way that we've been using for the last year or so at, around our place at the Journey or at CLI.
Yeah, I call it the big six, actually, is what I term it. And I try to make sure that before I begin my day, I know what my big six are. You know, what are the six most important things? What are the six things that I'm going to give the biggest bang for my time buck out of? That if I do these things, they're going to produce the most effect on the things that I'm involved in. And what I try to do is I try to have these ready even before my devotional time. And what I do is I bring my big six to God as a part of my devotional time. And it kind of helps me to integrate, you know, some of the time you do your devotional time, you sort of cut off God at the end and then you go through your day. Well, this helps me to recognize and involve God in everything that's going on in my day. The psalmist talked about that. He said, in the morning, you know, I bring my requests to you and ask you to bless him. And so that's what I do. It helps me to really involve God. And then I think the biggest thing that has helped me is it helps me to know where I'm going in the day. I found there's a tremendous power in clarity. When I know, hey, these are the six things I need to do. When I finish with something, I used to be so overwhelmed by the 35 things I still had to do today. But now I know. I know what the next step is for me. I know the next phone call I need to make. I know the next task I need to get started on. It just gives me, it lowers my stress. It makes me more effective. It's just been a tremendous help to me.
Yeah, and for those of you who are managing staff, which is a lot of people listening, make sure you know what the top six items are for all of your staff, or at least those who are direct reports for you, because you can't manage what you can't measure. And so if someone has not prioritized their day well enough so that they can tell you what are the top six items they have to get done before they go home in the evening, then you're not going to be able to effectively manage them, and then they're not going to be very effective on your church staff. And so don't be afraid of that. We've done this with particularly new staff in the past. We give them about a month to get used to our culture. And then over the next month, every morning at 8:30, they have to send us their top six list. And we will evaluate that, or we'll reprioritize that, or we'll ask them about something else. But they have to know exactly what they're trying to get done. And the thought behind this for both our staff as well as ourselves as we try to apply this is the 80-20 principle. And the old 80-20 principle that was made famous by an economist back in the 1800s is that 80% of your return will come from 20% of your effort. And that applies in all areas of life. He originally applied that to economics, where he said that 80% of the wealth is held by 20% of the people, and that's probably still true today. But it also works with your time. 80% of the results from your day are going to come from 20% of your effort. And if you think about it in another way, in your church, 20% of your volunteers do 80% of the work. 20% of your staff probably do 80% of the work. 20% of my day determines the effectiveness of my other 80%. So even though your list of to-dos may be 30 or 40 items long, there's generally about six of those that are 20% of your list that's going to give you the greatest return. So taking time to think that through in advance is a very powerful time management technique.
Yeah, and actually, I think this was your idea, Nelson, but I, of course, have stolen it, and we'll give you no credit in the future. But I've not only done the big six, but what we call the little six.
Yeah, this is sort of an adaptation that Roy and I have started doing of taking smaller items and putting those on a list of six. And these are things that you would do when you don't have enough time to do a big six. Now, let me just qualify that. Sometimes the big six are not the most time-consuming. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of your big six may be very small. I remember not too long ago, on about the week before my wife's birthday, one of my top six was to purchase the birthday present for my wife. Now, in this particular case, I knew exactly what she wanted, and I knew I could order it online, and I was going to have it gift-wrapped by the company online, thus automating my life, one of the other principles we talked about. I knew it would take about 10 minutes to do this, but it was 10 very important minutes to make sure I got that done. So that was on my big six, even though it wasn't necessarily a two-hour conversation. At other times, I've had very important phone calls that I need to make. And those phone calls may only last 10, 15 minutes, but it makes it onto the big six. So the big six are not the most time-consuming. They're the ones that are going to give you the greatest return, either immediately or in the future. They're the non-negotiables of what has to get done that day to keep everything running. So that's the big six. But then Roy introduced this concept of the little six.
Yeah, and they're things that I just have there, and I know I'm aware of them. And some of the time I'll do this when I get someplace early. If I end up being someplace maybe 15 or 20 minutes early, maybe the traffic actually went well, and I got there a few minutes early. Some of the time there's a phone call you can make, and you know it's a 5 minutes phone call. You're just following up on something. And so I could just make that phone call waiting for the other person to come. Maybe it's something that I'm working on, maybe a writing project, and there's just a little piece that I need to work on. Well, I have to keep it with me. I need to keep the resources with me that I need to do, quote, the little six. But as long as I have it there, a lot of the time something will come up. I mean, there are things that I've needed to work on that I've literally worked in line at the post office. You know, it takes 10 minutes, and I could
10 minutes? What post office do you go to?
Well, that's
I want to go to that time management, time-saving post office.
Well, my friend, there's a time management principle called living off peak that we're going to go on to just a minute, and I'll tell you my secret.
Well, I actually order all my stamps online now.
Oh, see, you're way ahead of me. But when you have to actually show up in person, you might be in a line for 10 minutes. And, you know, if you're prepared, there's something that needs to be done, and you can do it in that 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing about the little six. They're smaller items on your list that are important. But they're not going to take a lot of time. And so having those little six items handy, like let's say you had assigned 2 hours to one of your big six projects, but you get done in about an hour and 40 minutes. Well, you might think, well, let's walk around the office. Let's get some coffee. Let's just kind of blow away this last 20 minutes. But no, instead, go to your little six and go ahead and knock out a couple of those items. You feel very productive to be able to do two or three things in that extra 20 minutes that you have. I'll tell you one spiritual discipline that I apply to the little six, and that is scripture memory. If you've been around the journey, you know that we're really big on scripture memory. And every week we challenge the people in our church to memorize a small passage of scripture. And we give out these little memory verse cards that are about the size of a business card. So I keep that handy. And often if I'm standing in line somewhere or waiting at the bank or just waiting somewhere for something, I can pull that card out and I can review that scripture two or three times in the couple of minutes that I have. And that's a spiritual discipline that's very important to me. It's a verse I'm working on that week, and it often makes itself onto my little six, even though from a big picture standpoint, from a spiritual discipline standpoint, that's a very important thing for me to accomplish throughout the day. But that works out very well. At other times, I will have a folder of work that I can do very quickly. Maybe it's things I have to sign off on, or it's little things that I need to approve, or it's just something someone needs me to read and give feedback, perhaps a letter that we have going out, or maybe an email. It's something I can quickly work on that takes 3 or 4 minutes. And it's important that I get these things done, but they're on the little six, and it's just a handy way to make sure you're being productive every minute that you can be.
Yep. And so we said the big six is those six things that are most important that you accomplish in your day. And then the little six are things that just take a small amount of time that are important, but you can do them anywhere from, you know, right before a meeting starts to while you're waiting in line at the post office for 10 minutes, which can only happen if you apply the next principle for time management, which is live off peak.
Live off peak. I am not sure who I first heard this time management principle from. It goes back to a couple of old books that I have on my shelf that are long out of print. And I'm not sure which one taught this concept, but I very much remember when I first heard this. I thought that absolutely makes so much sense. It was like a light bulb went off in my head. It was like I did a little Eureka dance around the room. And I thought, why have I not thought of this before, of how to live off peak? Because there's a lot of things when it comes to ministry that we can't control. And a lot of times our schedule is under someone else's control. But one of the freedoms that we do have as ministers is we have some flexibility in our schedule. We do not work in a factory environment where we have to go to lunch when the whistle blows at 12 o'clock every day, or we have to take the break at 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever it might be. We have a little bit of flexibility when it comes to our schedule. We have flexibility about when we leave, oftentimes at the office, or we have flexibility with what we do with our time after we leave. And so the key to live off peak is to understand that there are peak times that other people are doing important things. For example, there is a period of time right after work when everybody goes to the grocery store. In fact, this is why convenience stores were originally created. convenience stores, the term 7-Eleven was that they're open from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. That was originally what it was, so that you could go shopping either early in the morning or you could go shopping late at night and thus avoid the peak times at the grocery store. You could also park up front and you could also get in and out a little bit faster, but you also paid a premium for a gallon of milk as opposed to, say, going to the big grocery store down the street. But everything that you do in your life has a peak time. For example, if you travel, there's a peak check-in time at the hotel. You probably want to avoid that. There's a peak time when security is going to be backed up at the airline. There's a peak time when everyone's picking up bread and milk and vanilla wafers or whatever after work. There's a peak time when most people go to the bank. There's a peak time at every restaurant that you like. And if you can determine what those peak times are, you can then work your schedule around it and learn to live off-peak. And the Methodists have known this for years. You know, they've always gotten out of church early on Sunday so they could beat the Baptists to the cafeteria. And they're living off peak. They're practicing that principle.
Wow, that's pretty deep, Nelson. Let me give you an example of this, a personal example. I don't know if any of you have ever visited the DMV before. But I remember one time I needed to visit the DMV.
I noticed you said that with like a smirk on your face. Yeah, the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Yes. And one time I decided to take care of a DMV issue on my lunch break. And previously I had done some theological study on purgatory, Nelson, and I decided I didn't believe in it. But after my lunchtime visit to the DMV, I wasn't so sure. I thought maybe that was purgatory after all. But what I did the next time is, and of course, you almost everything we're talking about, Nelson, you have to think ahead. You have to do some advanced planning. I mean, if you got 20 minutes before you got to get your inspection, you know, expires and you got to go at lunch, well, you got to go. But by thinking ahead, I decided I would call in, tell my office I'd be a little bit late that day. And I decided I would go into the DMV and I'd be the guy at the door when it opened. And so my DMV experience was actually very good that day because I decided I'd make just a few changes. I just had to think ahead, make a few changes. And so my experience was very positive by going when nobody else was going to the DMV.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that is to make friends with the clerk or make friends with the receptionist or make friends with the front desk hostess. I'll give an example of my life is the dentist. If there's one thing I hate to have to do more than travel, it's to have to go to the dentist. And I guess if I had to have dental work while I was on a plane in the middle seat with two heavy guys beside me, then that would be like the worst possible combination for me.
By the astute flight attendant, I'm sorry.
But I don't like to go to the dentist. But I like my dentist. He's a pain-free dentist. I like the office. And so I've gotten to know the receptionist, and her name is Dina. And so I asked Dina one day, I said, When's it lowest? When's it slowest around here? And she couldn't give me a great time, but she did give me this. She said, "Well, we usually take lunch from 12 to 3, and so normally the appointment at 3 o'clock has a very little wait." And so she read into what I was saying, which is, I don't want to have to wait. When do you have an opening? So I can't remember the last time I had a dentist appointment that wasn't at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Because my dentist, he takes lunch, and even if he takes lunch late, say he doesn't get to lunch to 1:15 or 1:30 because of he runs over in the morning, he's going to start back at 3 o'clock so he can make sure he gets home on time. So when I'm there at 2:55 and they're opening that door from lunch, I'm the first patient that they take back. Well, I've applied that same principle to the doctor. I had to go get a flu shot the other day, and so I called and asked the receptionist. I said, "Look, when do you think I should come? When I'm going to have the least amount of time to wait?" And she said, "Well, there's a particular day of the week, and I believe it was Wednesday, if I remember correctly, when most of our doctors don't come in till 9 o'clock, but we have one doctor who likes to come in at 8 o'clock that day." Well, I took that 8 o'clock appointment. And so when I got there, it was just whoever had to see that doctor, and none of the other doctors had patients at that particular time. I was in and out in like 15 minutes. Now, on the flip side of that, Roy, I've often changed doctors because of the wait. When I first moved to New York, there was a local family practitioner, a very well-known guy in the area, and he was very well respected. But it didn't matter what time of the day you went there. You had to wait 2 hours. So in this case, I was willing to shift doctors from maybe someone I liked to someone who was my second choice just because I could save the 2 hours of time. Because really, when you're getting a flu shot or you're getting allergy medicine like I'm getting, you don't have to go and go to the number one choice provider in the country. Now, maybe if I was really, really sick, I would want to go to this guy. But just for normal stuff, I was willing to shift and take maybe my second choice to have a faster experience.
Yeah. I'll tell you another place where if you can apply it, Nelson, this live off peak principle is great, is if somehow you can apply it to your commute. If you have maybe a lot of traffic or if you have a long time commute. Tell you what I did at the Journey is my commute was pretty sizable at one point. And what I would do is I would get up early and I'd spend, you know, a pretty good chunk of time in my devotional time, just praying and reading God's word and studying. And then,
which we promote that, by the way. We believe in that.
Yeah, we're for that. Yeah. We're for that. You pastors, reading your Bible and praying every once in a while is usually good. So what I would do is I'd get up, I'd take my time of devotional time with the Lord, and you know, then I would, you know, take my commute to the office. Well, the commute was when everybody else was going. I was trying to get there at 8:30, and so, you know, everybody was there. It was crammed. It was packed. It was slower. It was everything. And I thought, well, if I got to work a bit early, nobody would be there. And so all I did is I switched it. Instead of doing my devotional time and then going to work and all the traffic and everything, I would go straight to work. And then I had this time. I got there much quicker. It was much less stressful. And I just did my devotional time there at work. And so I gained, man, about 30, 40 minutes, literally, just by switching those things to do them off peak. Because I found out God was up, you know, early in the morning and then a little later, too. So it worked out great for me.
Yeah, and that takes discipline to do that, because it's tempting to get to the office and immediately start to work, say, on your big six. And so, well, you're disciplined in that area. And the goal there would be, priority-wise, to put the devotion, to make sure you're getting the devotion before you're living off peak. So you got to make sure you do that. I'll tell you another example in my life is call-ahead seating. Like, I don't like to have to wait at a restaurant either. And so sometimes I'll ask the hostess at the restaurant, what time do I need to come to get here to beat the crowds? And oftentimes they'll say, well, it sort of picks up at 6 o'clock. And so maybe Kelly and I will decide to go at 5:45. Or maybe they'll say, you know, in New York, it's usually like 8 o'clock when it picks up. So maybe we'll go at 7:30. And that requires a little bit of discipline to do that. I also do that at lunch. I ask the lunch places, when does it start getting busy and when does it end? And I'll either come before or after the lunch break. But sometimes you can't do that. But a lot of restaurants these days have call-ahead seating. I remember not too long ago, I was meeting with a pastor that I'd been wanting to spend some time with and had really worked to get this appointment. And we were going to meet at the Outback Steakhouse. The problem was it was going to be prime time to meet there. And I was so afraid that we were going to have to wait. And I'd really prepared my list of questions that I had for this pastor. And he was sort of a mega church guy that I'd been wanting to interview for some time. And so when I got there, I was just pleasantly surprised to find out that he had already called ahead. And our name was on the list. And even though there was 50, 60 people in the waiting area, we only had to wait about 5 or 10 minutes. And we had just a great dinner that night where we could just be relaxed. And he really gave me a gift of time with that. But I realized this is a guy who knows how to manage time. And so I'll ask, is there call-ahead seating? And even restaurants that don't have that, sometimes if you call ahead and there's a 50-minute wait, they'll at least put your name on the list just because you're nice on the phone. In fact, it's amazing what you can get done when you're nice to the receptionist, or you're nice to the hostess, or you're nice to the flight attendants, as the case might be. It really is amazing how much they will help you manage the time if you just ask for their help.
And we're for that too, also, Nelson, being nice. So we just want to go on record. We're for, you know, doing your devotions and being nice.
That's
we're,
exactly we're for both right. Of those yeah, things. But no more wimpy Christians, though, as part of that. But living off peak is just, it's such a powerful principle. And what you will do is you just start keeping a list, or even either on paper or in your PDA or in your mind, of when certain places are busy and when they're not. And sometimes, let's say you have a couple of errands to run. Maybe you've got to go to the bank, and you've got to go to the dry cleaner, and you've got to go to the post office. Well, you know, you pull up to the post office and there's 50 people in line. Just, you know, go ahead and whip over to the dry cleaner, drop that off, hit the bank, and then come back to the post office, and maybe it'll be cleared out. And so, yeah, that takes an extra couple of minutes to do that little drive around if they're all close together. But maybe, in fact, it saves you 20 or 25 minutes. You can also do that. And then another way that just ties into this is think of things that you do on a regular basis and ask, is there a way to do them faster? Two examples come to mind here for me, and maybe you think of others, Roy. One is dry cleaning. Now, we're a casual church, and I don't have as much dry cleaning as I had in a job one time where I had to wear a coat and tie every day. But I used to have to go in, and I would wait on the dry cleaner, and I would have to wait in line to drop off my clothes, and they would check through. You had 2 shirts, and you had 2 pair of pants or whatever. And so one time I asked, I said, look, is there an express way to do this? And they gave me a bag. They gave me a dry cleaning bag, and I think I had to pay $5 for it, and if I lose it, I have to pay $5 to get another one back. But they gave me a bag, and now I put all my dry cleaning in there, cram all that stuff in there, and I just drop it off. Hmm. And I don't have to fill out the form anymore. They've got me all scanned in. They've got my credit card on file, so then when I go pick it up, they give it back to me all hung up and dry cleaned, and the bag is there, and then the credit card is just automatically charged. So I get in and out like that all the time. Just the other day, Roy, I was complaining to you about how I had to travel and I had to use a rental car company that was different than the company I normally use. I don't necessarily promote any rental car company, but in this particular case, I was unable to use National, which is the car rental company I normally use. And I had to stand in line like 25, 30 minutes to wait to rent a car. And that's always bothered me that I can, you know, fly across country faster than I can rent a car sometimes. But in this case, I had to wait in line. But one of the reasons I love National is because they have this Emerald Club. And a lot of them have that. I think Hertz and Avis and most of the big dogs have that. But it's a card that you get so that you can go immediately to your car. And then when you check out, you just show them your card and you get through the express checkout. So you don't have to stand in line. And that principle can be applied to checking in for your flight, pre-checking your bags. And so there's all kinds of ways to do that, to automate it over and over. Another one is to always make your deposits at the bank at the ATM machine versus having to talk to the live teller. And you can't always do that for different reasons because, you know, some of our people launder money and things like that. That's a joke.
I've been cutting back. Really, I have.
We're against money laundering. But, you know, there are things that that you can do that help you live off peak. Even if it's peak season for somebody else, you're able to kind of find a side way around that to get things done in a faster way.
And the real key here, Nelson, is, and really why we're doing this bonus track, is to try to get you to think about the things that you do and really evaluate, are there ways that I could do them more efficiently if I could manage my time more effectively? You know, are there things I'm doing that I could just do at a different time and I'd save a lot of time? I mean, we've really just talked about four principles here today, Nelson, and honestly, the application of these four practices in my life, I'm estimating that I gain maybe 5 to 8 hours a month by applying just these four practices in my life on a regular basis.
Yeah, if you think about that, if you do say 5 hours a month, that's 60 hours a year. And that for most of us, that's a work week and a half, mm-hmm. or at least a full week of extra time that we've gained. And then if you add that up to 8 hours, you're talking about saving perhaps 2 weeks of life. And time equals life. There's just no way around it. And good time management is good stewardship, and I believe that's good ministry. And so I hope you'll go back and listen to each of the 35 practices that I presented, even though I gave those to you in a nutshell, and you'll just spend some time thinking, how could I apply that to my life? And then I would love to hear from you, and I know, Roy, you would love to hear from people. We'd love to get feedback on our resources about how you've applied this, and we will probably use your material maybe in a future podcast or something like that. But we will help take what you're learning and share that with the rest of the Church Leader Insights family so that we all become better time managers. And that's really what it's all about, getting more done for God in the fastest way possible so we can then do more good things for God and maximize the time that we've been given, making the best use of every opportunity that God gives us.
Yeah, we just want to thank you again for just taking part in this and thinking through these things. It really is a testament to your concern for the time that God's given you, that you'll take the time to consider these things. On your resource disc, you'll find a list of all 35 of these practices, and maybe just take a couple of them, maybe, I don't know, the top six, and say, you know, which one could I work on first? 35 is kind of overwhelming, but say, hey, is there one, two that I can begin working on right now? And we're just so grateful that you're a part of this and we're a part of your ministry in this way. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time.